Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Childcare Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson with you live from upstairs studio. In studio via telephone, Lisa Murphy. How you doing, Lisa Murphy?
I am awesome. How are you, Mr. Jeff?
I'm great. I'm out with the hounds this morning, and I'm walking by a bus stop, and there's two boys, probably like a 6 or 7 year old and a 9 or 10 year old, and they are just beating the crap out of each other with their backpacks and kicking and ninja moves and all this shit. And we walked over to the other side of the street to keep from interrupting it. And it was just delightful to see that bit of rough and tumble going on before school. I just wish I saw more of that. That doesn't have anything to do with this episode, but it was just a fun thing.
Did you get out
this morning?
Did you get out and join them? Did you get out and?
I wanted to just let go of the leash, and because the hounds would have been right over there joining in on it, so that would have been kind of cool. But I didn't. This episode,
you
we're talking. I tried to be a good citizen. Of at least my neighbor.
I mean, after the dog poop incident from last time.
Yeah, know? that was about a mile away. So nobody. I don't think there's going to be cross pollination about that one. But so this episode, we're talking about toys.
Toys that are linked to specifically. I'm gonna throw down specifically some of the Disney toys, Disney stuff that's linked to the movies, and I emailed Jeff or texted him, I forget. I mean, we have like four different threads always of conversation going on. And I said, I have a half-baked thought, which is the phrase that I'm starting to get, I think, a little bit more comfortable with. I think I'm very guilty of thinking I have to have a full thesis with references and quotes and type it up and submit it for peer review before I'm allowed to often toss stuff out to kick around. And this, I'm like, nope, I'm going to get better at just tossing shit out. So my thought was, you know, back in the day, and I'm going to be 50 in a couple weeks. Jeff's 50.
No,
like,
almost 51.
Disney, you're almost 51. Yes, the Disney movies would come out like there was like every 7 years, and then they would be re-released every 7 years. The point is that you didn't often get to revisit some of those what I would call classic Disney movies until you were able to like get them on Blu-ray or the discs or VHS or whatever it was.
And then they go back in the vault.
And then they go back in the vault, exactly. And so my half-baked thought was that because you didn't get to see the movie over and over and over and over again, the way that now kids would have, or adults even, would have access to, the toys were somehow like objects that allowed you to stay connected with whatever part of the story that maybe you were engaged with. So like letting the plot still play out, or even I would almost think that because there wasn't the opportunity to kind of binge watch the same movie 49 times in a row, I almost was wondering if the props actually had more likelihood to lead to different play themes. Like, even though it was, let's say, like a Bambi doll or a Bambi toy, I'm wondering if you didn't have 24/7 immediate access to binge watch Bambi 29,000 times in a row, do you think that there would have been a possibility for more play themes to be acted out versus now where you only see them acting out the movie? That's my question, and I have no answer.
My gut is probably because that story or back catalog of stories or whatever wasn't as deeply ingrained in their busy little heads. And I think, you know, it wasn't the flood of those characters wasn't as great as it is now with everything from video games and movies and toothpaste and toothbrushes and pajamas and all the shit. But there were still, like, I mean, all those Disney movies usually came with like the little golden book versions of them. I just Googled as I pulled up, and I didn't Google it because I don't fucking use Google because Google's evil. But I just searched golden books, and I did an image search, and there's, and I remember these from when I was a kid. There were other ways they could get those stories into their veins. Other than the movies back in, I mean, this is probably 70s and 80s, 60s, 70s, 80s that I'm thinking about. So that was there, but it wasn't the flood that it is now. So I'm guessing that there probably was a little bit more flexibility with those things. And
for like Bambi to just be a doll, for Bambi to be a deer, right?
Yeah.
And so it wasn't always acting out the script that you saw on the movie. Because maybe, again, like you said, you weren't as saturated with it.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, also, there weren't as many of the toys. There weren't as many of the things back then either. I mean, when did that flood really start? When they started putting those figures in Happy Meals every time a movie came out and that kind of thing?
I would say the 80s. I would say the 80s was when... Well, you know what? That would be a search. I mean, I would have to do some data digging to figure that out. You know, what was the first Disney movie of like the modern era? Not like Snow White, like not like the classics time frame, but like the more modern, where it was probably released with marketing, like with toys, with merchandise. And I would think somewhere around the Lion King, Little Mermaid time frame that. Mid-90s would probably be what I would be thinking.
Yeah, well, probably post-Star
Wars. Or late 80s.
Post-Star Wars, because Star Wars was one of the first ones that came out with all those things. And, I mean, I played with all that shit back in the day, and I could pretty much...
Do you remember? Hold on, I'm interrupting. Do you actually mm-hmm. have a memory of, like, needing to stick to the proper quote unquote script when playing with that stuff? Yeah.
Never with the Disney stuff. Seldom with the Star Wars stuff.
Yeah. So playing Star Wars didn't mean you had to
reenact the movie,
the actual movie.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Cause I'm thinking about that right now. That was an honest, legit in the moment question, because I'm like, I don't know. Cause my brothers and I would play like with all the Star Wars stuff too. I don't really have a memory of like getting pissed off if somebody deviated.
If somebody
it was like we were
script.
Making up our, yeah. Like we were making up our own stories with like Luke and Leia and Han and Chewbacca and R2-D2 and C-3PO. But it wasn't like that didn't happen in the movie. Like, I don't remember those kinds of like issues coming up.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Compared to now, when pity the poor child who tries to make up their own lyrics to one of the songs from Frozen.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if because, and that would be my hypothesis, and I'm not saying I have any Hilda, you know, I'm not going to, like, the dog in the fight here, I'm not going to go probably research this, but I'm wondering if it has something to do with the fact that it wasn't constantly available. And, you know, the toys, I think I was having a conversation with Todd, the guy who sometimes travels with me, and he's a huge comic book collector. He's really huge into this. But he actually said that the early fans of Disney and Star Wars, they had a hunger. That was his word. He's like, they had a hunger. And the toys fed the hunger to keep the interest in the series, whatever you call it, in the narrative, to keep it going. And so actually, he actually said that there was intentional, like they would stagger the release of certain things so that it was constantly like, you don't get everything at once, but you had to wait another year, and then boom, something else came out, and then wait another year, and then boom, and that there would be this then like climax of stuff before then the next series or the next installment came in. And I just found that, one, very manipulative, and two, rather intriguing.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's all about the dopamine release, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what it is. And the way that has changed is instead of having to wait weeks for things, they're producing so much more stuff, and the wait is less. And that's why everybody gets addicted to their social media feeds and this kind of stuff. They're looking for that happy juice in their brains when the new thing is available, whether it's a new video on YouTube or a new picture on Instagram of the coming up movie or whatever it is. And so it's just got ramped up, sped up so much more than it was back in those days. But it's the same process of feeding those happy chemicals into the brain.
Well, and as you just said that, Jeff, I wrote down FOMO, right? Fear of missing out. And you're like, oh my God, I missed a post. I got to go back and look at it. Oh, I'm out of sync. What did I miss? What did I miss? What did I miss? And he was saying that there was such anxiety, like if you missed something, if the window closed on getting one of those collectibles, that there was like huge panic and anxiety and jealousy. And I would say that that's probably the equivalent of the fear of missing out mindset that a lot of people might have occasionally, not all the time, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I mentioned this on an episode a couple months ago. I did an article recently, a post on the Playvolution HQ site about going from FOMO to JOMO. JOMO, the joy of missing out. The more I think about that, you don't know how happy I am, Lisa Murphy, when I hear about something that's going on pop culturally or that has been going on for like decades that I knew nothing about.
Dude, I could be the same way.
I'm like, I've never heard of that, and I could not be happier about it. And really, this last year that I've been dialing back the amount of social media I consume, I experience more and more of that, and I can't remember being happier, more content in my own skin, or more productive. So I mean, people, if you're looking for a change, work on changing from FOMO to JOMO, because it's an amazing transition. Since we've been talking about these toys, I think we should probably touch on them now in our modern classrooms, 2019, 2020, as we head into the future, and what role those kinds of toys play. I really don't like them. I really think we should do everything in our power to reduce them in our early learning settings for a couple of reasons. One is they are essentially, for the companies that produce them, they're essentially nothing more than commercials for the other products related to them. And unless those companies are giving your program a kickback for having them in the program, you're just doing free advertising for all those companies. And so fuck them. I mean, really.
Well, true. But I would even take the conversation even one step further out and say just toys in general. And by toys, I mean like plastic, crippity crap, things you can only have one of. And if you're a regular listener, I think you kind of know where I'm going with this. Jeff and I have a very not secret bias towards loose parts and open-ended materials. And, you know, as a rule, I'm not a fan of toys. But it's funny. How am I going to say this? I have an appreciation of toys. I have an appreciation of the collectibleness. I have an appreciation of the intrigue that they hold, especially for adults. And at the same time, when I think about setting up environments for children, And I've grown in this mindset. I mean, I'm now more scouring the sides of the road for usable junk versus saying I need to go to Target and buy a bunch of new toys.
Yeah, yeah. Because and part of that is because it doesn't have that narrative built into it. The loose parts don't. They are. I mean, in terms of Simon Nicholson and the theory of loose parts, the loose parts, because they don't have that narrative built into them, they are better variables in the environment. Because I mean, the example I use is the Batman figurine. Batman figurine is always just about always going to be used as Batman.
That's Batman.
Because it's got that story built into it. It takes a child who is a experienced player to turn Batman into Wonder Woman for the play that they're going in. It takes a lot of effort and their little brains to transform this thing with all this backstory into this completely different character. Whereas if they're using a toilet paper tube or a wooden block, that can be Batman, that can
or
be Wonder
stick.
Woman, that can be a, yeah. Yeah, those kind of things, they don't have the narrative built into them. And so it's easier for children, especially children who are less experienced at imagining and using symbols, to transform those things into what they need them to be for their play. And so that's the other point I wanted to make. If Disney's sending your program a check for $1,000 a month to have Disney product in your classroom, have the product. I mean, and then put that money into staff development, staff payroll. But if all you're doing is free advertising for them, back away. But also, if you're looking at creating a real child-led environment, the less you have those prepackaged narratives in your programs, the better you are, because the children are going to have more ownership of the narratives they choose to play with.
And it's seductive, right? If I have a room full of props that are 100% linked to, as you said, narratives and stories and plot lines that these kids are probably going to be familiar with, the play has that potential, like you said, of staying limited to just that particular narrative, right? It's easier for the children. It is hard, and by hard, I mean, honestly, it is difficult to sit in the place of, some might say, nothing happening if, in fact, your room is more of a loose parts room. Because you might not know what the kids are going to do with it. The kids might not know what to do with it. And everybody needs to be a little bit comfortable and not be in such a hurry to get to, quote unquote, playing happening. Because it takes a while for kids to figure out how to use open-ended materials. And you can probably speak to that even when you bring your loose part stuff to adult audiences. You know, you're kind of sitting in that place of, well, what do I do with this? And what do I do with this?
Especially when it is things they've never seen before. I mean, if it's kind of stuff they've had some contact with before, they can kind of think, oh, I can use this as a this because this reminds me of that. But when you throw some really odd loose parts into an environment, and I'm thinking of things I've salvaged off of, like appliances, these weird looking rubber connectors and bits of pipe and these kind of things that are just kind of shaped in these weird ways that most people haven't had contact with. You throw some of something like that into an environment of kids or adults, and it takes some thinking to sort it and classify it into their heads before they can figure out how to use it. And that's just kind of the process of play. You need to get to know the materials before you can figure out what to do with them.
And to be comfortable sitting in that time and as I like to say lately, holding that space without jumping in and starting to direct it, because I might be getting antsy with it looks like nothing's going on. So let's make something happen. Practicing sitting and holding that space is it's worth the time and effort and energy you put into becoming more comfortable in that space. Because I'm gonna throw something out there. I think you could, if you're not careful, have an adult agenda and a goal and objective, even with a room full of loose parts.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, that still can rear its head. And it, just because you have a yard or even a classroom full of open-ended loose part materials, you still need to be sure to keep your own adult agenda and ego in check. And I think you and I have shared that feeling, especially as loose parts lately have become, you know, pretty bits of bobs and sparkly, shiny bits of collections, I would argue, more than loose parts. A teacher needs to be mindful, adults just need to be mindful of not having still an adult narrative of what they want the kids to do or see in the open-ended stuff that they are making available.
Yeah, and I think I touched
on that. That would be my caution.
When we recorded with Dan about loose parts not too long ago, I think I made this point that all of that adult agenda in loose parts play, that preconceived idea of how the kids are going to use it and the right and wrong way to use it, all of that makes loose parts less loose. And
exactly,
and that just sucks the learning and fun out of those kinds of materials. I had a thing and it fell out of my head. Oh,
okay. When that happened.
Okay, I got something else to throw at you here, Lisa Murphy, along the lines of these things. I was talking to somebody, it's a couple years ago now. It was like within a year of when that Frozen movie came out, right? And she's just, the kids all...
Oh, you mean it was like 5 years ago?
Is that, I mean, Jomo, baby, Jomo. I don't know. It could have been a month ago. I don't know.
Sorry.
No, I mean, I'm totally clueless. And she's like, that's all they want to do is play Frozen. And I'm like, well, do you have Frozen toys in the classroom? Oh, yeah, yeah. Do you?
Well, there you go.
Do you have Frozen costumes in the dress up area? It's like, oh yeah, we've got Halloween costumes. People have donated and that kind of stuff. And I'm like, do you play Frozen soundtrack during the day at all? Oh yeah, yeah. The kids love it. I'm like, well, if you start pruning those things out of the building, you're not going to kill off that kind of play because it's still going to be in their heads. But having those things in the classroom actively promotes that kind of play. And so if you want to get rid of that kind of play, if you want to prune it back, prune those things out of the space.
Yeah,
I don't know whatever happened, but I
oh,
mean,
okay. I was going to say, did you get a follow up?
Oh no, of course not. But I mean, just all I have is my own personal experience with that. When we stopped allowing all of that kind of marketing stuff because Disney did not start sending me a check. We started pruning all that stuff out of our programs, that those kind of locked in play narratives kind of just disappeared over time.
So, and would you say, okay, I have two things I want to say. My first one, and I'm going to throw them both out and then we can come back to them. My first question is, was there a detoxing time frame for the children when you actually made that decision? You know, did you wean them out slowly, or did you just like on Monday when I came back in to your program, boom, nothing was there? That's my first question. The second one is, it's calling to mind that play intervention that we got that feedback from with that family child care provider that brought everything out of her space and didn't put anything back in until the kids were asking for it. So those two thoughts jumped into my head. Do you want to speak to either one of them?
We pruned slowly, much, much slower than I would have liked to do. Because I mean, everybody needs time to adjust. And at the time we were doing this, I'd learned enough to know that was going to make the transition easier. And well, I'm a fan. If I had, I love the idea of pulling things out and just putting back the stuff that that kids would request. But also, I'm not so sure I would advocate for that as much now after thinking about it, because I mean, that's kind of a shock, having input from the kids about what can we get rid of, and kind of.
Yeah,
kind of get them involved in the pruning back process, I think might be less of a shock to their busy little heads.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know
that's
for
valid.
Sure, but that's what my thoughts of it are at the moment.
At the moment.
I might change 15 minutes from now.
Right. Right. Then you can call me back. We'll record another.
Yeah, we can record another episode. Any more?
Well, I just mostly just wanted to toss that out there and just see if you had any thoughts on my half-baked idea.
No, I think they're probably, you're on track there. I think there probably was less lock into those narratives back when there was less exposure to them. I mean, it's kind of like everything else. The more you're exposed to it, the more likely you're going to make it part of your life. The last year, Tasha and I have been cutting down on the sugar and the carbs. And what made that a lot easier was that we both decided to do it and just stopped having so much of that stuff in the house.
In the house, yeah.
Because if there's not a beautiful looking and smelling loaf of artisan bread from the bakery sitting on the kitchen counter, there's less likelihood that I'm going to eat the loaf of yummy artisan bread.
I agree 100%.
So I think that kind of is the same with the toys.
Control the environment.
Yeah, there you go. Control the environment. You can grab more Lisa Murphy at ooeygooey.com and on all social media. If you check out, search Ooey Gooey, you'll find her. You can find me at explorationsearlylearning.com or playevolutionhq.com. We'd love to hear from you. Contact information is in the show notes. The links are right there to make it easy for you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing the show with friends and enemies. You don't want to discriminate. And we'll be back soon with another episode. Bye-bye. This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.